Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Hi, I'm Margie Nomura, and welcome to the Desert Island Dishes podcast. This is the podcast where every week I ask my guests to choose their 7 Desert Island dishes. These range from finding out about the dish that most reminds them of their childhood, the best dish they've ever eaten, and of course, the last dish they would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island. I hope you're all well and that you've had a lovely week. Thank you so much for the amazing reviews you've been leaving. I read them all and they genuinely make my day and they give the show a little boost, so thank you very much. I'm thrilled to tell you that this episode of Desert Island Dishes is brought to you in partnership with Sweaty Betty. They're a brand that's passionate about empowering women through fitness, but also to the world beyond, which I'm all in favour of. They make the best leggings in the business, in my humble opinion. The power leggings are a revelation, and obviously they're great for working out in, but they're also great for pottering about in, general walking around in, and they're just seriously comfy. I love the work that Sweaty Betty do with lots of different charities, from Fallen Angels Dance Theatre to Body Positivity Movement, and also the anti-bullying charity Ditch the Label. I just think they're thoroughly good eggs, and to celebrate this, they've given you, the listener, a 20% off discount code, which is quite simply Desert Island Dishes. That's just all one word. And thank you very much to Sweaty Betty. Here is today's episode. My guest today is Roz Purcell. Roz is a best-selling cookery author, a blogger, and entrepreneur. She grew up on a farm in Tipperary and has since traveled the world as a model and as a beauty queen, winning Miss Universe Ireland in 2010. Having developed an unhealthy relationship with food during her modeling years, her blog Natural Born Feeder and her subsequent cookbooks were born out of a change in her lifestyle and falling back in love with cooking. She now does triathlons, Iron Women competitions, organizes group hikes, continues to share recipes, and is a regular face on Irish TV. Welcome, Roz.
Well, that was an introduction and a half. Oh my God, I'm going to steal that now.
Yeah, you've done so many things.
Everywhere I go, you can go into the room before me and okay, do exact voice.
Yeah, everything. I'll be there at your wedding. Yes. Just like, so your childhood growing up in Tipperary on a farm sounded kind of idyllic. And I love that you describe your family as the faulty towers of farming.
Yeah, well, you know what? I don't think there was a day that went past that we weren't woken up early or we weren't dragged from the dinner table to go hunt cows that had broken out. So yeah, it was one of those farms and it still is to this day, but without the cows. So my dad used to be a beef farmer. He is no longer for health reasons. Well, retired.
But also, isn't he now a vegan?
He is. Yes.
Did that coincide?
No, well, not really. So I think maybe looking back, you know, obviously the agricultural industry in Ireland is huge. It still is huge. My dad just decided to go a bit more plant-based. And this was really to kind of get down his weight and just becoming a little more health conscious. And just, I guess, you know, there's fantastic producers in Ireland. Yes, there is. But for him, it was just getting more vegetables into his diet. So he's plant-based at home. Okay. And he kind of has his little kind of whatever he wants meal if he's out. Because we live down in a rural part of Tipperary. Now, there is fantastic food choices. But, you know, I think a vegan diet hasn't, you know, there's not a huge amount of options.
Yeah, so, it's quite difficult.
Yeah, no, he eats at home pretty much all the time. Yeah. So yeah, he's addicted to chickpea scramble at the moment.
Oh my goodness, because yeah, that's one of your specialities.
Yes, yeah.
So sweet. Let's talk straight away about the first desert island dish. And that's the dish that most reminds you of your childhood.
Okay, so this is pretty tough because I feel like all I did growing up was eat. But the dish that reminds me of home the most is actually a sweet dish and it is blackberry crumble. Mm. The reason for this is we have a huge kind of... We have a few fields out the back and there's a ditch that must run about 400 meters that just is blackberries. So my job during, once it hit August, September, was to pick blackberries to make crumble. So I feel like not only does it remind me at home, it also reminds me of a little bit of child labor. But I still to this day, it's one of my favorite desserts. You know, we could go on about our chocolate puddings and cheesecakes, but having a blackberry crumble, even rhubarb crumble, because we grow rhubarb at home, just brings back, it's just such a nostalgic thing for me.
Yeah, the best. And you say that as a child, you liked staying at your grandparents, mainly because they didn't make you do any chores, but also you got to cook all the time and your grandmother sounds like she was an amazing baker.
Yeah, you know, growing up, I actually thought that that was her job. But, you know, every single day she would make me breakfast, lunch, dinner, and then of course dessert. You know, we had dessert with every meal growing up, and she'd always make her delicious scones and her soda breads, and she taught me everything I know about cooking and baking. So you know what, it worked out great because, you know, she looked after me growing up, and in their last few years we kind of, my sister and I got to return the favor and look after them and cook. So it was really
so nice.
Yeah.
Did she have a speciality?
Well, I think like her thing, like a lot of Irish grannies, it's her bread and her scones, you know.
They're good.
Can't beat them.
Yeah. I found something you said where you described how you've always found cooking very therapeutic, even as a child. And that's one of the wonderful things about cooking. But I think many people discover that later in life, or maybe that isn't true. But what a great thing to have found out so early on.
Yeah, you know what? I guess growing up down the country, I think any kids who live in a rural place, sometimes life can get a little bit boring. Well, I wasn't, maybe it's different now because we didn't have social media. I wasn't really allowed to watch too much TV. So for me, being able to cook, and, you know, it was the one thing I had free rein. My parents, if I said, I want to bake cake, they would go, as long as you clean up.
Yeah.
And for me, it was like me time. It was time to experiment. Like as a kid, you love seeing what's going to turn out if you mix all these things together. So being allowed to have that creative control at such a young age inspired a passion, but also made me realize that I forgot about everything else that happened in the day. Now, when you're growing up, you don't really have much troubles. You're not stressed. So I suppose I didn't look at it as therapy then. But as I grew up into my teenage years, I definitely cooked more during exams.
Yeah, yeah. A good excuse to get revision. That's really interesting, like the idea of rural living now that, you know, social media is what it is. Mm-hmm. I wonder whether that kind of childhood even exists anymore.
Yeah, I think back to, like, if I go back in our farm today, I'm like, oh, that's where I had like my secret hut.
Yeah.
And that's where I had, you know, that imaginary house that I lived in. And that's where I hid in the ditch for a day when I ran away from home. And, you know, and you're like, do kids do that anymore?
Oh, that's so sad if they don't. Oh, my goodness. Okay, let's talk about the second desert island dish. And that's the first dish that you learned to cook.
So, you know what? It's not so much a dish, it's a type of thing. So one of the first things I learned how to make, and this is so strange, but it was a roux sauce.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, I remember my dad still does it now. So my dad's actually the cook of the house. He loves cooking. And sorry, no offense, mom. Mom is great at making desserts. So cauliflower with parsley white sauce was kind of always on our dinner table. And I loved it. It was the only way you could get me to eat vegetables as a kid. So I always wanted to know how to make the white sauce. So a roux base was obviously how you're going to create it. And also goes into pastries and different things like that. So I think I became like the roux connoisseur in the house. And I was always the first one to get up and make it. So it's my speciality.
The roux connoisseur.
Yeah.
So from quite a young age, you say that you were really into debating and that you loved politics. You decided to go to college to study politics, but as fate would have it, you got scouted as a model in the very first week. How did you juggle that? Did you do the two simultaneously, side by side, or did you have to pick one?
So for a while, I did the both of them. Like, I think the thing with college is you kind of dip in and out and no one notices as much, you know. Like looking back, I'm obviously glad the way everything turned out. You know, getting into the modeling industry was a fantastic way to travel, but I'm still very much into debating and very much into having a political view. And I think I've just looked at it in a way now that instead of going that route, I just chose another route where I have a platform where I can, you know, really express my thoughts and opinions. And for me, what I'm really passionate about is, well, there's a few things, but number one is definitely sustainability.
Also, do you think, are we getting an inside scoop that maybe you could be running for president?
Look, you never know. You never know.
That is not a no. Yeah. So we all know from the outside that modeling is really tough. And often you start at a young age like you did. Did it change the relationship you had with your body and your approach to food?
When I first started modeling, I think I was so flabbergasted that someone actually wanted me to model because...
Had you really never thought of it before?
No. You know, I guess, you know, growing up, you'd watch those shows like America's Next Top Model. And the only thing that resonated with me was like, if someone chopped off my hair like that,
oh, yeah.
You know, like... So I guess when I first started modeling, I didn't see that I was any different. For me, I was like extra tall in comparison to other girls. I'm surely that's a great thing. I just loved the buzz of going on a shoot and people doing your hair and makeup. I never really overthought what I ate or what I looked like. And I guess that's the thing. I went in with such confidence and I came out of it with no confidence. And that was really down to, I guess, the agents themselves. You know, they're only taking direct commands from the runways and the actual big brands. It's not really their fault. They're in an industry where they need to make money too. Like, I definitely think there's a way that they could say it to younger girls, which could be better, maybe a little bit more educational, you know, actually giving them advice rather than just telling them what to do.
Yeah.
And especially
thinking of the girls kind of as products rather than people.
Yeah. And I guess at the end of the day, like, you know, as a model, you're just a paycheck really at the end of the day to them. But 10 years ago, if I looked up how to lose weight, well, first of all, it was these crazy diets. You know, there's always a diet. There was there was nothing really you could find online that was actually just, okay, look, here's a way you can lose weight that's actually moderate and it's not drastic. And you're going to do this over a certain amount of time, but you know, it's going to be sustainable. And to be honest with you, I did not need to lose weight. If anything, I probably could have just maybe lifted a bit of weight to tone up.
Yeah.
You know? But when you're younger, 18, like, weightlifting for women wasn't such a huge thing. Well, particularly it wasn't the mainstream. Like, obviously now if you go on Instagram, you have so many amazing people to follow, which give you free guides, free advice. You know, it's fantastic. And that's one of the beauties about social media, because I think we can get caught up in the whole negativity of it. Whereas if I look back, if I had social media back then, I probably wouldn't have made so many mistakes.
Yeah, that's really true. I hadn't thought about that, but in that aspect, things have changed so much. And as you say, definitely for the better. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about it when I was researching you, and I think it does sort of take away any innocence that you had in a way as a child. Because when you're younger, food is just this sort of pure, unadulterated joy.
Yeah.
And then as you get older and you sort of figure out that it's something
there's good and there's bad.
Yeah.
And maybe after eating the bad thing, you should feel bad about it.
Yeah.
And maybe you should not eat so much the next day to counterbalance it. You know what? I think all in all, you need to kind of be able to come back and just wipe away the whole thing of like good versus bad, because at the end of the day, you need to live life as well.
Yeah.
And if food is something that you're constantly in a vicious circle, you need to end it, because, you know, food is something that should be enjoyed. It's the center of a family. There's can be so much passion in it. And I know there's a lot of people out there who just go, oh, I just eat to fuel myself. But at the same time, and they don't overthink it. And that's fantastic, you know. But I guess for a lot of people out there, they struggle with the whole food guilt. And getting a control of that and managing it can be quite difficult.
Really difficult. And I thought as well, someone who found such comfort and joy in cooking, that must have been a really difficult and quite confusing time.
Yeah, I guess when I first started modeling, I moved away from home and then I kind of ended up moving to New York, and I just kind of stopped cooking and baking. It was kind of like, I need to not do it, because I'm one of those people, if I make a bread, I eat half the thing or the whole thing. I was being nice to myself there, but I'd eat the whole thing. And, you know, it doesn't even get to my freezer. So I stopped it altogether. And God, I just remember being, when I was living in New York, just waking up and being like, what should I eat now? What's going to be really healthy? And just having like steamed broccoli for breakfast.
Oh.
And yeah, I know. And like, look, broccoli's great, but like, you know, with a few other things, you know, thrown in there. And I just remember the house I lived in, like all the other models were fantastic, but we were all slightly miserable because I didn't smoke or anything, but like, you know, they were just smoking out the window just to kind of occupy themselves, or, you know, drinking cans of diet drinks and so much coffee, just suppressing the whole time. And I was like, I didn't really overthink at the time. It's when you're kind of growing up, I'm like, wow, I'm so glad I just kind of, in a way, when I was in New York, I remember thinking, oh, I'm just after failing. This is me. I'm such a failure. I couldn't get down to the weight that they wanted. But at the same time, looking back, I'm like, I'm glad I actually just had enough self-respect and just, this is my shape. I can't actually get any smaller.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to go home.
So good. Okay, so this isn't the most natural segue, but let's pause there and talk about the third desert island dish. And that's the best dish you've ever eaten.
Okay, so it was actually in London. Yes. I started going with my boyfriend about 2.5 years ago. And one place he said I really need to go visit when I was in London was Palomar. Now, I love Middle Eastern food. So we went there one night and I literally had to unzip my pants leaving. I have a pain in my back of eating so much. But it was such a nice mixture of food, you know, from their polenta mash, from their hummus, falafels. It was all so, so delicious. And I always just remember looking back going, that was one of my favorite meals. We actually sat at the bar where you could see them making everything. So it was a really entertaining night. I just always remember it as one of my favorite kind of food memories.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you been back since?
No, it's kind of one of those things where I almost don't want to ruin it.
Yeah.
Does that ever happen?
Oh my God, completely. Yeah, you just want to sort of keep it in a little
box. Yeah, keep that little box. Yeah. But they do have a sister restaurant, which I'm going to try out.
Okay, yeah. That's a safe bet. Okay, so the modelling then turned to pageantry. You won Miss Universe Ireland in 2010, which is a pretty impressive accolade. And that meant that you went to America to represent Ireland in the world contest. You were still really young at that point. What was that all like? Because it must have been a bit of a whirlwind.
I guess entering Miss Universe Ireland, that was kind of at the start of modeling. So I still had this like crazy confidence, you know, and I was still a little bit in, I was in college, I'd say a little bit because like half and half. So when I entered Miss Universe, I think I entered on the last day. I remember emailing them like, hey, can you let me in? Like I'm after missing registration, but sure, like someone said I should do it. So I'm going to go for it. I was at a shoot and a photographer was like, you should enter it 100%. I went to the heat. I ended up winning that segment. So I represented a small nightclub in Dublin, ooh, which I'd never been to before until that night. And then I ended up going on to Miss Universe Ireland. And I actually didn't win the first year.
Okay.
The first year I came second, but I was only 18. And they were like, you should really try again next year with a bit more of your experience underneath you. And, you know, maybe learn how to do your hair and makeup. So, you know, I was like, whoa. I was like, I wish I had photos to show you right now. I wish you guys could visualize this, but just imagine an orange. Yeah, that was me. Okay. I wasn't great at fake tan. So I went back the next year and I ended up winning. And I headed off to Las Vegas. That's where the competition was on for 4 weeks. So imagine 4 weeks in Vegas. That was enough of a shock. And actually prior to Vegas, I got an opportunity to go pageant train.
Okay.
With two pageant coaches. So honestly like Miss Congeniality because, you know, growing up, you're like, growing up to Bray, like, do pageants even, like, when I think of pageants, I think of like Texas pageants.
Yeah.
And that's very much what it's like.
Yeah. So that is my only point of reference is Miss Congeniality. Yes. Is it like that?
It was 100% like that. Obviously without the whole drama of like,
yeah, finding the killer and women. All that. Yeah. Yeah.
But I remember training in Colombia and my pageant coaches who were so much fun used to make me wear heels everywhere.
So now you're amazing.
Oh my God. Yeah, well, now I guess I'm, you know, I don't have to wear heels. I'm really into like squatting and deadlifting. Yeah. So I'm all about, you know, my flexibility, ankle mobility. So, but I remember them used to make me do flights and flights of stairs in heels and then come down because they were like, you're going to have to walk downstairs in heels.
Oh, well. Yeah. Coming down is way hard.
So, you know, it was such funny. I look back in that time and I'm like, it feels like another life. Like, it feels like that wasn't even me. But looking back, it's so funny. And when people even see photos of me back in the pageant day, they're like, that is not you. And I'm like, it is. You are so different now.
And do you have to have a special talent? Is that one of the sections?
No. So Miss Universe was at that time owned by Trump and CNN. So I don't think talent was required. It wasn't a required thing now. But if I had to do talent, I would have baked everyone a cake. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that would have been, your Rue would have definitely won. Yeah, that's so interesting, isn't it? And maybe not that surprising that it was owned by Donald Trump. Yeah. But at that time, he was just a billionaire property magnate and famous for being the host of The Apprentice.
Yes.
Did you meet him?
Oh yeah, loads of times. So when we were in Miss Universe, we met him, I think it was like the last week, kind of in the lead up to the competition. And I remember he stopped and was like, Ireland? You're from Ireland? Oh. Yeah. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, you've got great golf courses. And I was we do. I was like, I've never played golf. But yeah, we do. And then actually he got me signed to Trump Models.
Oh, right.
So I got signed by Trump Models after the competition. I didn't win. I came seventh, but they signed me and I moved straight to New York.
Okay.
So I've been in his office. I've had the chats. And this is obviously all before he ran for president. And we all realized that, you know, he's probably not someone you want to hang around
with. Yeah. And that was in a more innocent time.
Yeah.
Little did we know what was in store.
All we knew was The Apprentice.
Yeah. How crazy is that? Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about the fourth desert island dish. Okay. And that's your favorite sandwich.
Ooh, this is hard because I feel like I lost 7 years of sandwich eating from modeling. So
you made up for it soon.
Oh, definitely. You know what? It's hard, but I think it would have to be a fish buddy.
Ooh, that's a great one. Yeah.
Because I feel like I would have that now. Like, you know, as a real comfort food. Yeah. And anyone who's been to Ireland, like, we do great fish and chips.
Okay. So fantastic. Talk me through your perfect butty.
So you have to get batch bread.
Yeah.
Yeah. So none of that fancy stuff like sourdough or anything. No. Just some batch bread.
Yeah. White sliced.
Yes. White sliced. A little bit toasted. Okay. I like it crunchy. I like the toast crunchy. I don't really like it too soft. I personally don't like really processed fish fingers, but if you can get really nice, we have some fantastic brands in Ireland that do really delicious ones that are kind of a little bit more, you know,
they're unnatural.
A bit more natural, yeah. So I get those with kind of some mushy peas, might throw actually a few potato chips in there. And I'd obviously mix, a little bit of ketchup and mayo to make mayo sauce.
Obviously. Yeah.
Delicious.
That sounds really good. Yeah. So far from the glamour and glitz of the modeling world that we see in glossy magazines, you did have a tough time with it, both in New York and then in South Africa. And it all resulted in you coming back to Ireland. And that's when you launched your blog, Natural Born Feeder. Tell us a bit about that.
So I decided to move home, and actually I was living in Dublin at the time, and I actually decided not to move to Dublin, to move to Tipperary. I think things got so bad for me. I was like, I just want to really be alone, like go back to my childhood, because I felt like I'd almost kind of lost my way a bit, that I had developed such a bad relationship with myself, with food. And I needed to almost go back to where I started. And I think that happened to a lot of people. It's almost like a little bit of grounding.
Yeah.
So I went home.
Well, yeah, because you flew the nest in quite a dramatic fashion to go and travel the world. So I think
I went home and I kind of just said I wasn't going to do anything for a month. And it didn't last a month because, you know, if you're down to pray that long now, things get a little boring now. No, I had a great time with my family. But I just went back and I remember saying, I'm just going to do this the right way. I'm going to really, really wipe away the idea that my body is just for show. My body is actually going to be the same body I'm going to have for the rest of my life, and I'm going to start treating it right. And once I do start treating it right, it's going to respond in such a positive way. I can't keep just being so negative towards it and resenting myself. I got to a stage where I would see strangers walking in the street and I would go, I wish I had their legs. I wish I had. And I was like, why do I hate myself so much? So it was kind of going home to really relearn all that and just, you know what? It really was lift that stress.
Yeah.
That stress of always having to be in like a look a certain way.
Yeah, it must have felt like quite a big weight had lifted off your shoulders.
And I guess like there's loads of models out there who may not be able to relate to this, who just naturally, you know, tall and lean and never have to worry about their skin. But I was at an age where I was fluctuating quite a lot in weight in my early 20s. When I was moving countries all the time, my skin would break out. And it was this pressure of, oh my God, I hope no one sees me like this. And it's a horrible thing not to really be able to feel yourself.
Yeah.
So I went home and honestly, it was the catalyst to kind of really springing me back into me. I still went through some rough times. You know, it took me a long time. I think then for a while I went a little bit orthorexic in terms of like, I got too extreme and
too healthy.
You know what? Like I need to have like, where's that from? Where's this from? I couldn't just relax around food. So I think I tried to find balance. I went a little bit over across that line, still had a little bit of control over food. And that's actually when I went to CBT to really help with kind of my control issues around food and just letting go of that kind of anxiety still, which I had from modeling about putting on weight.
And so how did the idea come to turn all of this into a blog?
So while I started Natural Born Feeder about 2 years after I got home. And at that stage, I just started CBT. So actually, I think starting Natural Born Feeder made me realize, well, firstly, food is 100% my passion. But secondly, I need to deal with my food issues because I suppose it really made put them in the forelight.
Yeah.
Because I was talking about food all the time. And then I became this food person that I needed to make sure that I was dealing with my issues. I didn't want to be like a hypocrite.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of how Natural Born Feeder started.
Yeah. Well, I love that because it's sort of a testament to you falling back in love with food and discovering this way of life that really worked for you. And probably part of the reason that it's been so successful is that it was completely authentic and you and your readers were kind of learning together.
Yeah. And I guess a huge reason why I started Natural Born Feeder, and I think this message might have gotten lost along the way with just loads of recipes, was to really help any young girls, young guys, not really go through what I went through, which is a huge diet culture and yo-yoing and I suppose just looking at food in a negative way and making sure that everyone's relationship with food is positive, it's fun and tasty.
Yeah. Then in the middle of all of this, you discovered triathlons and you've just done Iron Women competitions, which is so impressive. And I'm totally in awe. Tell us firstly, what is the difference between a triathlon and an Iron Woman?
So an Iron Man. So I did an Iron Man 70.
Is it an Iron Man or an Iron Woman?
So I know. Yeah.
They I didn't want to call it.
Yeah. Okay. So I started triathlons and this is because my older sister, Becky, she does the Fuldas and Sirenmans all over the world, and her boyfriend. So he actually trains people. So I started taking on triathlons. I did an Ironman 70.3. So an Ironman 70.3 is actually half. So I'm not as hardcore as my sister just yet. But I did that in Austria. And basically, there's so many different lengths when it comes to triathlons.
Okay.
And for me,
but it's cycling, swimming and running.
Cycling, swimming and running, yeah. And I still do them all individually. I obviously have trained. I'm a qualified personal trainer as well. So for me, at the moment, I'm really focusing on programming because, you know, it's obviously something that's huge at the moment. I think for women and for men, it's a fantastic smart way to get results that you want by not overtraining and by just being scientific about it, you know?
Yeah.
So I think a huge part of thing about me when it comes to food and sports is trying everything, experimenting. The one thing that I always say to people with food is experiment to find what you like, what suits you. And it's the exact same thing with training.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, you say only did a half. I watched my brother do a half and I cried like the whole way around because I was just
it's so emotional. Yes. Oh my God, I watched
he thought I was being so weird because every time he came around a corner, I was just there. Like,
I crying. Know, but I remember going to see my sister do a full one in Copenhagen and every time she came around the corner, I was like, oh, I'm so proud of
yeah,
you.
It's yeah. amazing, isn't it? And so obviously you've been on this incredible food journey. How has training to this sort of professional level of sport like changed your mindset on food?
You know what? It really changed my views in fueling yourself correctly. So yeah. I think when I started doing triathlon, I realized I wasn't fueling myself. Even though I was kind of getting back on track, I wasn't really keeping an eye on what I ate. Now, I don't like to talk about numbers too much, but it kind of made me very aware of what macros we need depending on our activity levels.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic and smart way to really understand what your body needs and how you should be fueling it, depending on your goal. Yeah. So for me, it definitely made me realize, you know, I would have spent years cutting out carbohydrates and things like that. You know, if you looked up the carbohydrates 10 years ago, it was like, do not eat them. Yeah. They make you fat. Well, you know, overeating just makes you fat, not carbohydrates. So for me, it was just one of those things, like really like getting back into that way of eating that's just fueling your body. Looking at food as not just a good or bad thing, it's just, you know, fueling yourself right.
Yeah, it's a really interesting way of looking at it, and I think yeah, just adds another string to your bow in terms of what you're doing with food. It's really interesting. Let's talk about the fifth desert island dish, and that's the dish you eat the most often.
Oh, that is so tough. The dish I eat the most often would probably be nasi goreng.
Ooh,
yeah. So I love Indonesian cuisine. And I recently just came back from Bali. Now, even before I went to Bali, you know, I was always a fan of nasi goreng. But I think since coming home now, I've had it pretty much every single day. It's just so quick and easy.
Was that your first time going?
First time in Bali, I know. I've just been like looking at people go on Instagram all the time. And I'm like, so jealous. So eventually got over.
And it lived up to expectations.
Oh, it did. Big time. The food was delicious. Obviously, the weather was fantastic. And it was just a nice escape.
Yeah. So talk us through, how do you make your version of nasi goreng?
Okay, nasi goreng. First of all, I actually put a little bit of water in my deep frying pan, not oil, because I like to add a little bit of oil later on. So I put a little bit of water in. I'll saute off a little bit of shallots. Mm-hmm. Sounds so fancy. Yeah. Now. Look, there's a really quick version on the blog too, but this is like if I have time version. Some shallots, a little bit of ginger. I'll put in some sambal oleic, which is basically just chili paste. I actually put in curry paste into mine as well, just a tablespoon. Now this is serving for two people, just because then it gets like so many other flavors into it in a really quick and easy way. I'll kind of let them brown off a little bit. Then I'll throw in some shredded cabbage, some shredded carrots, let them wilt down, add in my rice, put a little bit of tamari over it again, and some tofu.
Yum.
Yeah. And then I'll fry an egg to pop on the top.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I'm not surprised you've had that every day.
Oh, it's so good and so quick and easy.
Now, amongst all of the very cool things that you've done in your career so far, there is one particular thing that I've been dying to ask you about. You went on Come Dine With Me.
Oh my God. Yes, I did. So I think it was like 7 years ago now, I did the celebrity Come Dine With Me. And it was the first Irish Come Dine With Me. And it was hilarious. I was only talking about it earlier. There's so many repeats on Channel 4. And, you know, I get tweets the whole time being like, oh my God, is that you? And I actually won.
I know.
Yeah. So it was for charity. I think my charity at the time, I think the chosen charity was Make-A-Wish. And yeah, it was so much fun. It was fantastic.
For anyone who doesn't know, I mean, it's such an institution, but it's a cookery competition It's a television show and you compete against each other to host the best dinner party and then you rate each other on your cooking and your hosting skills.
So I kind of played them all off. Okay. So
I was going to ask you about the tactics.
Yeah. Going into a TV show, I knew that when I watched Come Dine With Me, I always love to see the underdog win. So going in, I pretended I was really, really bad, like terrible.
So what day were you cooking on?
So I was cooking the third.
Okay.
So, and I really like that because I was in the middle, you know, because I always feel like the first night people are a bit sketchy with their numbers because they're like, no, I don't want to, you know, hype it up too much.
Yeah. Going first is the worst.
Yeah. So the second night, you know, you're kind of like, oh, you'll give better ratings. The third night, you probably give your best ratings. And then Thursday and Friday, you're going, oh no, I need to win this again, you know? So what I did was I pretended I was really, really, really terrible in the kitchen. And everyone believed me because I was 21 at the time. So they were like, oh, this poor girl, she's just out of college. She's probably a disaster in the kitchen. I also told them I've never hosted a party before. I love hosting dinner parties. My mum, that's what she brought me up to do, was host a dinner party.
So Roz, are you quite competitive?
No, I'm so competitive. Like I would set a competition now. If you said we're going to the shop, I'd be like, meet you there. You know, I'm very competitive in nature.
Do you remember what your winning menu was?
Okay, so it was actually a Saints and Sinners menu.
Okay.
So what I did was I did an indulgent dish with a very kind of clean dish. I think my beginner dish was, I think it was some sort of falafel. Mm. With and then about 7 years ago, falafel was pretty good, like you know,
pretty out there.
And I think my main, one of the mains anyway, this was back when I ate meat, it was a kind of a really delicious lamb tangine with tabbouleh salad. And then I remember one of my desserts was a raspberry posset with shortbread biscuit. Ooh. But I actually, at that time, I'd been starting to experiment. So it was a vegan raspberry posset. So I'd use coconut cream and I'd use agar agar to set the jelly and make a kind of a real vegan buttery shortbread. So they were all like, what the hell? Yeah, I came out and they're like, what? And I was like, oh no, I just threw this together.
Is it any good?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. And then I won.
That's amazing. I love that. And what, like the previous nights, were you kind of looking around thinking, I was like, I've got this in the bag?
No, I kept being like, yours is so good.
Did you think that?
No. Okay. So, you know, there was a few people on the show, like two or three, you go, they don't have a chance. And I knew it was always going to be between me and another guy.
That is so funny.
We're still great friends, me and that other guy. Yeah.
And does the Irish version, do you have the same voiceover?
Yes, the same voiceover.
He's amazing. Oh, he's so funny. So dry. Yeah. I think he's called Dave Lamb. And
yeah.
I'm a big fan. So you've written two best-selling cookbooks and a third is apparently in the works.
Yes.
What's going to be the premise of that?
So the third, my diet has kind of, I don't like to call it diet, sorry. My lifestyle has changed quite a bit in the past 2 years. I introduced a lot more plant-based recipes. This was predominantly for sustainability reasons. So, you know, it was one of those things where I'd replace, you know, two meals a week with a plant-based one, not really being so focused on, you know, like protein is the middle of my plate and what goes around it. And then eventually got to stage where I'm probably like 90% plant-based.
Okay.
And just with the exception of a few eggs.
A little bit of
fish buddy sandwich again. So yeah, I'm about 90%. And I guess for me, even the blog has gone that way. Now, I always said when I started Natural Born Feeder, I'd never become an advocate for one type of lifestyle or whatever it is, eating way, because everyone is so different and it's so individual.
Yeah.
But for me, I guess I look at it as a way that I'm just inspiring people to eat more vegetables.
Yeah.
I would never tell people what to do with their diets. You know, it's really up to them. But for me, just getting more vegetables in can do no harm. So the next book is going to be Natural Born Feeder and it's going to be vegan. So it's going to be from breakfast, lunch, dinner, all sorts of recipes, but just keeping kind of the ethos of making food easy.
Yeah. And not, I like that you're not dictating to other people what they should eat, but then it makes sense that your blog and your recipes reflect the way that you do personally eat.
Exactly. And I guess like the one thing, this book isn't just going to be for vegans or plant-based eaters. It's for meat eaters. It's for everyone who just wants to try a new recipe.
Yeah. And am I right that I read that when you have a shower, you have a bucket in the bath and water all your plants with
the
bucket?
It's actually a thing I stole from a Scandinavian site. A lot of people do this, that they'll have like a water bucket in their shower to collect excess water for, you know, watering your plants or different things around.
Does it matter if the water's soapy?
So what I tend to do is I'll put the bucket down, you know, before you start washing your hair and stuff.
Yes.
That like that minute you have where you're like, oh, what am I doing? Oh, I'm in the shower.
Yeah. Yeah. A shock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, I think.
And you'd fill up a bucket pretty quickly. It's kind of shocking when you see it. Yeah.
Hey, yeah, I feel like that's a good tip. I'm going to start doing that. We're on to the sixth desert island dish, and that's your go-to dinner party dish.
Ooh, go-to dinner party dish is my aubergine tangine. Ooh. So it went from a lamb tangine to an aubergine tangine. But you know what? It's just so easy. You can do it in the slow cooker or you can do it on the hob and it takes about 45 minutes.
Okay.
And of course, the great thing about veggies is it's so cheap to make.
Yeah. So you know, you don't need to advertise that to your dinner party guests, but
no, you don't. And it's very impressive because people are like, oh, this is such a fancy like tangine, it tastes delicious.
And they know you spent a long time
doing it. Yeah. And I guess the hardest part is it's just dicing up the aubergine and then it's just plain sailing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you've got a sharp knife, that's not Do you serve a pudding?
Oh yeah. I'm massive into dessert. And you know what? I never make the same dessert twice for friends calling over because I always just love trying new things. Like the biggest hit lately, and I think it's probably the one I'll make a few times over, is I've made a delicious new vegan carrot cake.
Ooh.
And with like a cashew mascarpone. So it's really, really good. And my boyfriend was like, don't make that again, because he ate like the half of the cake. I was like, came back in, I was like, it's gone. He was like, I hate it all. And you know, he's one of those people that, you know, he loves to go to the gym and stuff. And he's like, I just don't know how, like, all this nice stuff in the fridge, I'm going to have to eat it. Yeah. You know? He's like me, you know, when it's there, you just shame nothing.
Me and my husband are exactly the same, but sometimes I'll be making something for a cooking job and I'll come back and it's been eaten. Oh, and my husband's eaten it.
I have so many sticky notes that say, do not touch.
Yeah, I think I'm going to need to invest in sticky notes. So we have a cookbook corner on Desert Island Dishes, and I want to know, what's your most treasured cookbook?
It is Ottolenghi Jerusalem.
Ooh, yes, a classic.
It's one of my favorite books. I always go back to it. I think actually, you know, when I was a meat eater, you know, his lamb shawarma and just things like that, you just can't beat. He has so much detail in his recipes and he has so many veggie dishes. Like, so I still use the book. He has fantastic vegetable and rice dishes I'm always going back to. And every time I come over to London, I always try to go to one of his restaurants. He's a huge inspiration to me. I think in the whole cooking kind of world, like, you know, when he started bringing out his books, all of a sudden every small cafe was doing these, you know, falafels and courgette burgers and stuff like that. So, you know, I think he just had a huge influence over everyone, and for good reason. He really, all of his recipes work out 100%. He's meticulous.
Yeah, you're so right. It was a complete game changer. I like, the sort of day his book came out, I was getting requests for private catering being like, we just want Ottolenghi style salads. Yeah. Just like the most used phrase ever. We're on to the seventh and final desert island dish, and that's the last dish you would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island.
So I definitely think the last dish I would have before being cast off would have to be something that would be nostalgic again. And now look, I'm Irish, so of course there's potatoes in there. I think it would just have to be like growing up, our family, mashed potato is served with every meal. So I think delicious kind of buttery mashed potato. And my second favorite food is curry. So it'd be served with the curry. Because I know a lot of people like curry and rice, but no, mashed potato.
There are no
that
rules.
Sauce, you know, yeah. So I think it would obviously be a really delicious vegetable coconut creamy curry.
Yeah, with loads of mashed potato.
Loads of buttery mashed potato. Yeah.
Okay, so vegan, but then the mashed
potato. I'm getting so hungry. Like my mouth is watering right
Me
now.
Me too.
Yeah. And then dessert. It would be something in the lines of, you know, kind of nostalgic again, either a crumble or a tart with loads of custard.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. I will be joining you. Roz Purcell, those were your desert island dishes. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
So there we have it. Another delicious day of desert island dishes. Don't forget, you can find me on Instagram at Margie Nomura. You can also sign up to the newsletter at desertislanddishes.co, where you'll also find lots of lovely recipes and various bits and bobs to read. Don't forget to leave that 5-star review on iTunes if you haven't already. And other than that, I think that's it. So I will see you next week. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.